Illinois Public Media. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And today's entire program is about the natural world. Later on, we'll be talking about ticks, including an invasive species newly detected in Illinois. That'll be at about half past the hour. But first, podcasting environmentalism. This spring, a group of students at the University of Illinois set out to make a collection of podcasts. This was an assignment in their conservation biology class. Their objective was to highlight some of the conservation work happening at the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. Their topics ranged from endangered species to human-animal relations. Let's listen to a sampler.
Today's segment will be focused on the alligator snapping turtle. What do we know about this species? Why is it important to protect this species? And what is being done for their protection? These are just a few of the questions.
Imagine a web of life meticulously woven along the coastline of Illinois, each fiber representing a crucial connection between water, land, and the communities there. Like many important habitats in the United States, this system has undergone significant damage. However, through management and restoration, we can facilitate the repair of this web from...
In 2007, a coyote walked into a Quiznos at 36 East Adams Street in Chicago, to the dismay of the people trying to get a tasty sandwich.
That must have been scary.
Everyone inside, including the coyote, was safe. Apparently, the coyote was injured and looking for a safe, cool place to relax.
Abandoned mine shafts are among one of the most pertinent yet overlooked problems in the conservation concerns of the United States. In this podcast, we will be mining deeper into the issue raised and the history of the concern. Tag along.
Red swamp crayfish are one of the most invasive species of crayfish around the world.
So, like, if you pull a red swamp out of the water, you're like, yeah, I can see that this guy's a fighter and that this guy's, like, a survivor, and it can do a lot of damage.
You know, they can move over land. They're not...
Range up to a class 3 felony, which is can result in a significant amount of fines, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in fines and restitution.
There are 13 segments in all, and you can find a link to listen to them yourself at our website, 21stshow.org. Joining me now to talk more about the project are the professor from the class and two of the students. Alex Harmon-Threet is an associate professor in entomology, the study of bugs, insects, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Professor Harmon-Threet, welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, Brian. Thanks so much for having me.
Alana Zeitzer is a grad student in the program in Ecology, Evolution, and Conservation. Alana, welcome to you as well. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
And Greta Kyleman is in the final year of the combined bachelor's master's program in Integrative Biology. Welcome, Greta. Thank you for being here as well.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So, Alex, I want to begin with you. This is your conservation biology class. What are students there to learn about?
The conservation of our natural world. It's an upper division class, which attracts both graduate students and undergraduates. And we talk about why are species changing? How are they changing? What can we do about it? What role people play in the destruction of our natural environments? And how can we work together to try to remediate some of the major problems that we're seeing in society, climate change and habitat loss and destruction, spread of invasive species and things like that.
What inspired you to incorporate a podcast into your curriculum this year?
A whim, mostly. because it's an upper division class, we have all of these students who have learned so much about biology. And I want to always empower my students to know that they can be change agents in the world. And so every year, in this course, or I teach the class every other year, but when I'm teaching it, we always try to find ways that they can do something impactful for their final project. You know, almost every class has a final project, and I always wanted to try to think of, like, well, if they're going to spend so much time on it, you know, you put four people who are college, almost fully college educated and really bright and know so much about biology, how can they use all of that information and put it together to make a positive impact in our world? And this year, I had just seen some advertisements from the university that they had all of this new podcasting ability and equipment. And I was like, that's what it's going to be. And the university was super supportive. And they have lots of equipment and spaces for the students and resources. And so it was actually pretty easy.
pretty easy. All right, Alana, let me come to you. What was your initial reaction when you learned that you would be creating a podcast as part of your work for this class?
I was excited. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I have some experience creating podcasts, and I'm a big proponent of science communication. I think it's very important. So having something that could be taken outside of the classroom and used was very exciting.
Greta, what about you? Are you a big podcast person yourself?
You know, I listen to a lot of podcasts, but I'm not going to lie, I was a bit apprehensive going into this project. I had no experience making podcasts, so that was a bit daunting, but the technology was pretty easy to use, and I had a great time doing it. Learned a lot.
Yeah. Well, talk about that. What was that process like? You know what? Actually, let me come back to Alex, because maybe we should establish sort of the ground rules that you set out or the idea here. And a big part of that was working with the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. So can you talk about how that partnership came about?
Yeah, I have previously worked with IDNR for my research research aspect of my lab, but I reached out hoping that they would be receptive, and they were so welcoming and excited about the idea. Jayette Bolinsky, who was the person I was in contact with primarily, she just had so many ideas of how the students could, like, topics that they could cover, subject matters that they could cover, and really saw this as an opportunity to help them reach some of their goals, which is to better reach the public, right? IDNR has for many decades been pretty severely underfunded, and as a result of that, the public perception of IDNR is a little bit weak. And their understanding of what they do is pretty weak, and their ability to, like, combat that, even though their funding is much better now, is still pretty limited. And so it's a huge opportunity for them to, you know, have students kind of dive in deeper and create something that was fun and maybe going to help improve public scientific communication and knowledge about kind of what's going on at the state level.
Yeah, boy, you talked about funding shortages. I mean, that really happened, a lot of that, starting during the Blagojevich administration, and I think anyone who's visited a state park in the last decade or so has definitely seen the struggles to keep up the infrastructure, and that's just one aspect of what they do. So what kind of support did they provide? How did you come up with the topics, that sort of thing?
Oh, excellent question. I had several meetings with IDNR before I rolled this out to the students to figure out what topics they might be interested in. And she sent me an extremely long list. And I tried to think about, like, what the students might, you know, have the skill and knowledge to cover well. I kind of threw out some other ideas that I had as well, like the cicada emergence, which is not something that IDNR technically covers, but I thought would be of kind of great public interest because I had been getting a lot of emails about the cicadas. And, you know, we kind of finalized the list. She zoomed into our classroom. A representative from IDNR zoomed into the classroom to talk to the students about, like, why this was important and, you know, and why they were excited to work with us. And they also helped us identify experts in the field to interview, because one of the aspects that I required the students was to have an expert. You know, I wanted them to make the podcast, but also to have expert, you know, kind of opinion experience in that, so that, you know, it wasn't just their ideas kind of coming up. So the IDNR was critical in helping us make those connections, and also for efficiency, right? Like, if every student group had to find their own expert, that's pretty inefficient. And so that was really helpful to help them kind of get that part finalized.
Yeah, as somebody who is a journalist, what we do is spending a lot of our time looking for experts. It's certainly nice to have that served up to you. Greta, let me come back to you. So talk about the process of getting started on this podcast. How did you and your teammates choose your topic?
Well, we were assigned a topic. We were assigned red swamp crayfish just based on prior input we had about our interests. So we were put together randomly, but when we came together, we decided that our first step would be finding the experts and talking to them, because we really had no background in this issue, this invasive species. So that was kind of our jumping off point, seeing what the experts had to say and sort of formulating the podcast around that was sort of our idea. And we got a lot of great input. We interviewed three people, all from, like, varying sides of this issue. And I think that was a great way to kind of get a holistic idea of the issue for the podcast.
Yeah. Alana, what about you? So you're assigned the topic as well then? How did you get started on it?
Yeah, so we were also assigned a topic. We kind of chose ones we were interested in, and then my group actually had two to choose from. We ended up focusing on the coastal management program. And for us, that was quite a large topic to really delve into, because it covers a lot of different things, and there was a lot of directions to go in there. And so we spent a while just trying to get our heads around what the coastal management plan like encompasses. We also pulled in an expert to talk about and help us kind of get through to just giving people a general overview of what it is they're doing and what the IDNR is doing.
Well, let's talk about that. What did you learn about coastal management? I got to admit, when I saw that headline, I was like, wait, coastal management? We're in the middle of a prairie. What kind of coast could we possibly be talking about? But of course, we've even done segments on the show about Lake Michigan erosion and that sort of thing. But what did you get out of this process?
Yeah, so a lot of it goes back to Lake Michigan, to the Great Lakes, where, you know, we're just one state where many states are bordering the Great Lakes. And so the IDNR is kind of taken over. To me, one of the interesting things was identifying priority areas and how they go about identifying, okay, these are areas that are of concern. We also kind of delved into a few different types of areas, like riparian areas and parks and things like that, and what kind of management is going on in those locations. So we delved kind of into a few different things and tried to give a bigger overview of what they are doing. And yeah, just trying to, even for them, trying to figure out, you know, we've got miles and miles of coastline around the lakes and around rivers, and where do they even focus their efforts on is, to me, something very interesting.
And Greta, can you talk similarly about crayfish and what you learned about that? I think, again, it's not something that people necessarily think of with Illinois. Maybe they think more of a swamp, you know, down south, Louisiana, that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, and it's interesting you should say that, because honestly, that's where they're coming from. The big issue with the red swamp crayfish isn't that they're just moving on their own accord. It's that fishermen are using them as bait and tackle, or they're being used for crayfish boils or whatever the purpose may be, but they're being brought up north because they're native to the southern tip of Illinois and further south as well, but they're being brought further into the Midwest, and then they're competing with native crayfish species, and they're just a lot bigger. They're just better competitors. And so it's causing a lot of like trophic destruction because they're again, competing with the native crayfish.
And, what does that mean, trophic destruction? For those of us who are not, grad students in biology.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I would describe it as just kind of like a chain reaction, so to say. You know, you have your levels of the environment. You have, you know, your primary producers, your plants. You have your primary consumers. You have your predators, your apex predators, and whatnot. And so when you alter one segment of that chain, there's just this, you know, this domino effect that continues on. And with the red swamp crayfish, when you add this kind of aggressive primary or consumer as well as predator, it kind of affects everything in that food chain and aquatic system.
So, Alex, I want to come back to you. These are science students. They're not media majors, journalism majors. Talk about how they sort of handled the podcasting element of this. Was there consternation? Did you get a lot of questions? What was that like?
I will tell you, I don't have any experience podcasting. And so when I assigned this, I was really nervous. Like you said, most of them are biology students. I was like, they don't know a lot about this, but you know, the university had great resources, and the students asked very few questions. They just seemed to really dive in and be really excited about the opportunity. Particularly, I think they were excited about knowing that this was going to go to the Illinois Department of Natural Resources and that it was going to be useful for conservation, right? Like, if they're going to spend a lot of time on it, knowing that their effort, it was worth it. I always, you know, like to remind everyone that Illinois is at least partly a publicly funded institution. And so we have some obligation to make sure that we're communicating with the public about what's going on here, what, you know, and I also really love to empower the students that they have so much knowledge and that they can share that knowledge with the public. They can share it with their legislators, they, you know, and other people, and they can, you know, hopefully be agents of change for helping to improve our society and improve the conservation around the state. And I think they just got really excited about knowing that they had a direct impact on what was going to be happening in the state.
Yeah, direct impact. All right, let's take a break. We're going to continue this conversation when we return. And a little after that, we'll be talking about ticks and a new invasive species that has made its way to Illinois. At least it was detected for the first time this spring. We are talking about a group of students at the U of I in conservation biology for a course taught by Professor Alex Harmon Threet, where they made podcasts in association with the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, sort of highlighting some of the conservation work that that state agency does. We're also talking with students Alana Zeitzer and Greta Kyleman. We are going to continue this conversation. If you want to join us, if you have a question or a comment, 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. More to come here on The 21st Show after a short break. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the conservation biology class at the University of Illinois this past spring, which took on a project creating podcast segments, highlighting some of the conservation work happening at the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, looking at different aspects of what they do, sort of fighting against the spread of invasive species such as carp, or I guess they're now known as Kopi, swamp crayfish we've also talked about. They do things like capping orphaned oil wells and trying to make safe abandoned coal mines. And they also look at diseases such as avian influenza and chronic wasting disease, which is something that a lot of hunters are certainly well aware of here in Illinois. We are talking about all of this with the professor of the class, Alex Harmon Threet, who is an associate professor in entomology at the U of I. Alana Zeitzer was a student, a grad student in the class. And Greta Kyleman is another student in that class. 800-222-9455. If you want to join our conversation today, 800-222-9455. All right. Alex, you're a researcher. You study bees and conservation, forest management. You've post work in that area. How has science communication fit into your work and professional identity?
Yeah, I will say that when I was a graduate student or kind of settling into being a researcher, science communication was not really something that we talked that much about. But as someone who studies bees, the public is so genuinely concerned about what's going on. It became a bigger and bigger kind of component of what I do, just kind of talking to people about their concerns about the declines of pollinators specifically. And I realized that the public really wants this information. And because most research is publicly funded through the U.S. government, I felt like it was my obligation in some ways to at least try to inform them as much as I can. And so I with every project, I try to think of like, how can we get some of this information like to the public, to the taxpayers who are paying for us to do this work? And so over time, I've, you know, tried to figure out different ways to interact with the public. You know, we've done things like having a kids camp to try and teach them more about biology. We've, you know, I've done other interviews. I, you know, try to like answer questions that people have. We do outreach projects, community science projects. But it's kind of becoming a bigger part of, I think, what we need to do as scientists to help combat all of the misinformation that we see about what's going on in the natural world, right? Like, and I feel like I have a heightened sense of needing to do this in the last like 5 or 10 years, where all of a sudden people are really not believing scientists, or they, you know, people, you know, are disputing the facts of situations. And so all we can do is try and put more positive information out there, more well-researched information, and hope that that reaches the people who are willing to hear it.
Alana, what about you? I wonder if this course, this work, or maybe just your education in general has made you think about science communication. Is that something you came into biology thinking about, or has that changed over time for you?
Yeah, I've been thinking about science communication for the past few years now. I mean, I think for me and a lot of my age group, we became interested in science, especially biology, through really amazing science communicators, watching Bill Nye and Steve Irwin. But since entering undergrad, but mostly during my graduate career, I've been doing, you know, programs communicating with middle schoolers through letters to a pre-scientist. I've been doing some science podcasting before this class, and other things. It's just been really important to me, especially I tend to study fungi a lot, types that are not mushrooming, so most people don't know much about them. So trying to educate people has been a big priority for me.
And Greta, a similar question to you. I don't know if you feel comfortable talking about what you hope to do with your education someday, but I mean, do you see science communication as part of that? And has that changed over time?
Yeah, I mean, quite honestly, I hadn't thought much about science or scientific communication until this project. And I have hopes of going into conservation. And as we've seen from these podcasts, there's nothing that's more effective than having a medium to communicate to the public that's, you know, accessible and understandable. And so it's definitely something I see myself doing in the future in some capacity. But yeah, this was a great introduction into effective science communication.
Greta, would you have any advice for future students taking on a project like this? Anything you would do differently next time around?
That's a good question. Familiarize yourself with the software for sure, and be comfortable talking with the experts. They want their knowledge and their research to get communicated. They want people to know what they do. They want people to know about the issues. So it's a little daunting to talk to these experts since they're just so smart and educated. But at the end of the day, they're really cool people to talk to, and you can have really interesting conversations and just learn a lot.
So, Alex, we're coming to the end of our time together. I understand one of the goals of the project is to give DNR something it can use to really communicate what it does to the public, right? And I should say that's still in process, but people can hear the work now. We have a link on our website at 21stshow.org. What do you hope listeners will take away from these podcasts about DNR and conservation biology in general?
As part of the project, I had the students, things that they needed to include was they needed to explain some aspect of biology along with interviewing their expert, and then making sure that there was a public appeal so that the public really understood why they should care about this. And I hope that by listening to the podcast, people better understand the hard work that DNR is putting in, why these things matter for our state and our country, how they can maybe even participate in some of these things to improve our conservation of our state, of our animals, of our water, of our landscapes, because ultimately each person has their own role that they can play in helping to improve overall conservation in the state. And you don't have to be a biologist to do that. You could be somebody who, you know, puts native plants in their yard, or figures out ways to reduce your water usage, or you know, sees abandoned coal mines that you or orphaned wells that are on your property, and saying, you know, I should probably prioritize getting those capped because maybe it's important to reducing pollution and or reducing invasive species spread. That's a huge one, right? Like if you see invasive species, telling IDNR about it is a big deal. So I hope that everyone takes something away that they can do and a better understanding of our natural world.
An excellent segue into the second half of our show, where we will be talking about an invasive species. Alex Harmon-Threet is associate professor in entomology at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Alana Zeitzer and Greta Keilman are students there. Thank you all so much for sharing your work with us today on the 21st show.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you for having us.